Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program has been brought to you by TechServe, New York's original and still the best Apple computer, iPod, and iPhone store and repair shop. For more information, visit TechServe.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
All right, welcome to Snacky Tunes. That was just Octo Octa, Who Will I Become, the lead track off his new EP, Between Two Selves. We'll be playing a little bit later today. Very excited.
Cool.
Yeah. Good, appropriate music for a sort of rainy Monday here in New York. I'm Darren Bresnitz. I'm one half your host. Shout out to Greg Bresnitz, who's traveling in France for 2 weeks. that lucky. Lucky guy. It's, yeah. Good for him. So I'm happy to have Lauren Cinnamon. Did I get...
Cinnamon. Yeah.
Oh, there's a wine there. It's trying to throw me. And Chris Grosso from Vice on the show. Very excited. A lot of really fun, exciting stuff going on. Welcome to Snacky Tunes.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
So let's get into a little bit about your history. Lauren, you studied film.
Yep. SUNY Purchase.
How'd you like it up there?
I hated it while I was there, and like most kids do. But the minute I graduated, I realized how great of a program it was, and many people at Vice actually are coming from the Purchase.
Is that the nickname? The Purchase?
It's actually the Purchase Mafia is the nickname.
Oh, really? Many people?
Yep. Apparently they, as like Stanley Tucci went there, and the woman from The Sopranos, and they all work within, once you get out, they'll all find you and help you find a job. So
do you have a handshake?
We don't, but we should.
And so you were doing a lot of stuff. You were doing documentaries.
Yeah, docs.
What do you love about docs?
I love editing, and I think I was on set once when I thought I wanted to do narrative in school, and the repetition was so boring to me, and I just feel like it's really fun directing in the edit and the collaboration you can find in doc. Finding the stories, it's more fun for me than ever working in narrative. And it's each material you work with kind of dictates how the story should go. And so it's new every time.
And you graduated and more or less went straight to VBS.
Yeah, straight. A couple months. But
couple
yeah.
months.
But yeah, right there.
Was that a mafia hookup?
No, they were just looking for editors, and I had done a documentary about someone, an environmental terrorist, as they call, out in Oregon, and they watched my stuff. And I was really used to doing short films, and that's kind of what Vice ended up doing, where you had to shoot, edit, direct, do everything yourself.
And I remember your first series, the Toxic series.
Yeah.
I think the one that scared me the most is probably Toxic Greenpoint, because hanging out in Greenpoint and seeing how awful everything was, like 4 inches below me.
Yeah, I actually live there now too, so it's quite scary. Yeah, that was an interesting one about the Exxon Mobil spill that still exists under Greenpoint to this day. There's lots of cancer-related stories to it. But the Toxic series, it's a great series. It's one of the first serious series that I think Vice did that gave VBS and Vice a different angle than the magazine.
Now, Chris, Lauren was already working at VBS when you wrote them, right?
Yes, I got off work one night, like I told you, and I watched the show Epically Latered, which was was Patrick O'Dell's skate show, and... you know, it seems like it was just like right after the first one. It was probably like the second or third episode, and I wrote a MySpace message to him like, I don't want to say like, oh, the archival was wrong, but I was like, oh, if you ever need any help with something like this, I have a vast library of skate videos and all this useless knowledge of the skateboard industry and skateboard history. So long story short, I went in, I think, 2 days later, and then just started coming in more and more and sitting with Lauren and just kind of figuring out not just how that show works, but how one puts together short documentaries.
Now, you've been working in food since you were 12, right?
Yeah.
You have actually, it's your father who, I've actually been to the Wyckoff Delicatessen. It's a pretty famous deli in northern New Jersey.
Yes, it was started by Cornelius Yoke in 1954. It was a German guy. I think he was living in... Wyckoff is like a lily white suburb, mostly Dutch. Wyckoff is like a Dutch word. Yeah. When you tell people you're from Wyckoff out here, they think of kind of towards Ridgewood, Queens area. But this was... My dad worked in publishing for Random House for years, and then I guess decided to get into something more lucrative. Always was interested in culinary arts, and he bought a pretty well-established German deli.
For those who aren't familiar with the New Jersey deli diner scene. It's a big deal.
A deli does not sell dog bones, tampons, deodorant. No. A deli sells food. So,
yeah. Well, those are bodegas. Right?
Those are. But that's the distinction when someone says the deli here. Yeah. Like, you can get a decent sandwich at a bodega.
Yeah.
But it's few and far between.
No, the art of deli and appetizing is, I mean, it's coming back, but it's
hell. You got to make 20 fresh salads a day, 5 soups, then sandwiches, and obviously the help you get there is not the smartest. Maybe in New York, though. I mean, if you could try to spin it like a barista, maybe it would be good, but, you know, not in Northern Jersey. So it's like a...
So, for both of you, for those who've never watched VBS or Vice, you guys, there's now a show on HBO, but you guys have a very different take on storytelling and producing, and the way that you represent people through a media lens. Can you talk about your narrative approach and your aesthetic approach?
So, particularly the shows that Chris and I have worked on, we have, I guess, worked on... in the most recent years, more of the culture angle. So we have worked on the show Tattoo Age, which we've been pitching for years, and finally, like 2 years ago, got it up and running. But so that series profiles the tattoo artists that we think are the best in the country or have really shaped the way modern tattooing is. And we feel that traditional media is horrible at with the reality shows and... really, the narrative and the point is to make content that we want to watch ourselves and not dumb it down to the lowest common denominator. And think if you have something appealing in a story that people will want to watch and pay attention to it.
It's pretty straightforward. It's done well. Lauren is obviously a professionally, you know, she's a trained film editor. And so instead of just having 20 people at a production company who don't really know the subject matter great, but, you know, can... It's more personal. It's more well thought out, and it's easily controlled. You don't have to come back from a commercial break, so you don't have to always re-explain the same thing 5 times. The story can always move forward. And so it's everything from Tattoo Age to we do a show called On Acid, and give the person a tab or two of acid, and then they have to cover an event. And we did one... with a guy that did stand-up comedy for the first time. Another person went to the Westminster Dog Show, and then I brought somebody to a monster truck rally. And it's basically, it's so simple, it's deceptive. It's just get the camera there, someone to lead them through, and just kind of ask someone about their experience, and that's it. I guess it's straightforward. And then, you know, obviously, it's, I think, Lauren's technical skill that makes it really go, but it's...
And I think a lot of the content is... it is so personal to the people who make it. It's, you know, there's a real talented pool of people who work there.
And, yeah, not just our stuff.
And, you know, there's only a couple people working on, like, their passion projects. And if it's not a network of people and it's more like, they really give the opportunity, I think, for a place that you wouldn't have short films go. I think that of them as short films, that there's not really... any place for that. There's festivals, but there's not really, it doesn't really fit in the mold of other networks, so.
Do you see this as the future of television and storytelling with you guys leading the forefront, but other networks popping up using the same sort of ideas and platforms and integration that you're doing?
Totally. But if you even look at Apple TV, the way it's like a curated list of content that you want to view.
Yeah, it's super personal, and I think it's kind of the next generation will be not even a conglomerate or not even like one network, but it'll be, there's one kid out there, and he makes the, you know, he makes the bakery show, and he goes to bakeries, and he shoots, produces, edits it, airs it from his, you know, computer. Someone comes to him if they want to buy it, and I think that will truly be, you know, that's where I think it will go next. It gets so specific that everybody can watch exactly what they want to watch all the time, you know?
Speaking of niche programming, what sort of numbers are you looking at for viewers as what is considered a success? Because when even main network numbers are getting lower, which is a good sign for broadband channels. But what type of viewership are you looking for?
It's definitely growing. You know, Munchies, for example, you know.
It grows constantly. Like, all of our Munchies, just the Munchies videos on the Vice YouTube channel has got more views than all of the Food Network's stuff on the YouTube channel. Our audience is already there, and I think we're actually kind of training them to look for, you know, food stuff now. And they're not necessarily like into different chefs, and they're just watching it because they think the stories are interesting or they think it's funny that this guy cooks something drunk, like in the case of Munchies. But if you look at Vice, like, I think that one of the top videos is like 11 million, and if you look at one of like the top Munchies, it's hovering around 700,000 views. Some of them are, I mean, I always use the example of the Brad Spence episode. He's, you know, a very talented chef that works for Mark Vetri or their business partners down in Philadelphia. And he has a couple hundred thousand YouTube views, not including the views on the site. They're separate. That's kind of a boring detail. But I think to have, you know, a quarter of a million views for somebody that's relatively obscure, people are watching because they like his story, you know? So it grows all the time, so it's hard to say. I would say 250,000 views on an episode would be
that's
great.
That's good. Quarter of a million. That's
great. Yeah, and that's within like a week.
Yeah. It goes pretty fast.
All right, we're going to take a pause. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about Munchies and about the food vertical the guys are planning. We are actually doing our next barbecue blowout on July 9th with Brad Spence and Mark Vetri.
That's awesome.
If you guys want to come.
At right down the street from
my
house?
Hope Street. Yeah. They're coming up from, we're bringing them up from Philly.
Oh, wow.
They're going to do their barbecue. $10 for Mark Vetri and Brad Spence.
Is he going to barbecue any mortadella?
I think, I have to look at the menu. I'll look it on, because we haven't shared, but I think it's going to be mortadella hot dogs. But if you go to bbqblowoutjuly.eventbrite.com, $10 gets you a plate of Vetri and Spence food and a beer. It's going to hang. And Jason Green
people.
From Violent Bullshit is going to be DJing.
Excellent.
Yeah.
We're here with Chris Grosso and Lauren Cinnamon from VBS, and we're talking about Munchies. That was your first food show.
Yeah, that was...
Now, for those who've never seen Munchies, what is it?
I guess the basic format is that you go to a chef's restaurant, and you kind of cover him during his shift, find out what kind of food they serve there, what kind of restaurant it is, and then when he's done, you head out to two or three places. He brings some friends along and shows you where he likes to eat afterwards. And when they're nice and loose, they head back to their own place, and then they cook up something that's not on the menu or not typical of what their cuisine is. And it ranges from a blowout celebration in the end to a sad sandwich eating affair among two people.
Sad sandwich eating.
Yeah.
Who are some of the guests? You mentioned Brad Spence, you mentioned Anthony Bourdain, but you've had a whole litany of people.
Andrew Zimmern, Michael White, Cal Elliott from Rye, Dale Talde, David Chang was the first one, the Franks, Frank Castronovo and Frank Falcinelli.
Love those guys.
April Bloomfield.
Now, there's a few infamous episodes, right?
There's a couple.
The Bar Isabel one?
Bar Isabel is just the... It's in Toronto. We have some guys that we work with from the Vice Toronto office. Patrick McGuire, Sean Fellin, and they've got this great shooter-editor, Albert Hugh. And we kind of work with them together, and they're... Sometimes they make Toronto seem like the most fun place on earth, and this Bar Isabel would be the center of that universe.
As a man who's been to Toronto, that is no easy task.
I gotta say this. People in New York say, come shoot when it's not busy. And then everywhere else in the country, and I guess in the world, they're like, well, come on the night when it's the busiest so we can show how packed it is. You know? So.
Yeah. And now you've also did, I think, probably one of the biggest sketch for you guys. Your first name chef was Eddie Wang's Fresh Off the Boat.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, as a show with like, I mean, which is, I think that was a big turning point for you guys, because that was a show that followed a more basic, even though it was broken in three parts, like your idea of what a traditional food show is with a name chef, and it's gangbusters, like done phenomenally well.
We worked with Eddie first on a Munchies, and then obviously he had a bigger idea. He's got a lot of big ideas about what he wanted to do, and they kind of took it and ran with it, and you know, works with his production team there, and they kind of, you know, make things that are more personal to him. Again, it's still, you know, a bigger show, but a bigger show at Vice is still, you know, two camera people tops, you know, the producer and then the talent, if it's hosted like Fresh Off the Boat.
What for you makes that show great? What do you love about it?
Lauren?
Well, it is really personal to him, and he's super articulate, but yet can't. He can connect to people and loves to put himself in situations that he's just been interested in. They're shooting a new season, and I think they're going to Mongolia is one of the locations.
Mm-hmm.
And
wow.
He kind of goes from, he wants to do some highbrow stuff, some lowbrow stuff. They're going to Russia. And I don't know. I think it's how young people want to be talked to. They don't need... someone 30 years their senior telling them about what kind of food or situations they should pay attention to, and he's tapped into a voice that's not represented.
I also think as a younger person too, though, he doesn't try to make it as simple as possible. He explains something straightforward, and I think that's a good part too. You can be fun and you can get the facts out as well about something.
Also, if you never listened to his book on tape, it's one of the best way to spend 7 hours. It's really funny, and he's a great reader. He's articulate. I mean, that's really, the way that he turns phrases and gets his ideas across is really exciting. But you guys have some other big things coming up as well. You have a big launch in the fall.
Yeah, we're going to be launching a whole food vertical, as they call it. Vice is basically kind of the hub, and we have Creators Project, which is our art and melding of art and technology. We have Noisy, which is music. Then there's Thump, which is the electronic dance music events and scene. It's pretty vast in what it covers. There's Fightland, which is a collaboration between the UFC and Vice. And then we will have the top secret name, Vice Food Vertical. that launches.
Oh, top secret name.
Yeah.
Do you have it picked yet?
Oh yeah, and it'll be when the party comes. That's when that will happen.
Ooh, that's gonna be a good party.
Yeah.
Who's gonna cater to that one?
Everybody.
Yeah. Tell them. we just want to put a bunch of chefs together that you would never see together at a restaurant or anything, and do kind of a crazy menu blowout event.
And give it away.
Awesome.
It'll be free.
That's fantastic. Now, you're also working on a Andy Ricker documentary, correct?
Yes.
Can you talk about the focus of what that documentary is going
to
be?
So we got invited to go to Andy Ricker of Pok Pok to Thailand with Andy in February because he was there doing some research, and we shot with him there. And then from that, it has grown into a documentary about what Pok Pok has become, but more about Andy Ricker as a person and his obsessive personality that he isn't like anyone in the world that we think, doing Thai food. So it talks a lot about food, a lot about Thailand, but more about just how singular of a person that Andy really is.
Yeah, I mean, he basically opened a restaurant in the United States that did not exist. And in 2005, I think that's pretty hard to do. You might go to some great Thai places in L.A. or San Francisco or in Queens, you know, Ayata or Streetify, but you really won't find anything like the food that he does and the way it is on his menus. Like, there's nothing comparable. And to do something like that is no small task. And it was, you know, it's pretty methodical. He's been traveling to Thailand for the past 25 years, and obviously he's a great student of culture and cuisine, and basically just recreates things that he sees over there. But it's truly impressive once you get into the story, just what it goes into making something like that and then reproducing it in different iterations. I guess he's got 6 restaurants and a beverage company, which is
and he's opening more. It's just growing.
Yeah. That's just that open. And when you watch him train his staff at these things when we're filming, it's not like they can say, oh, I've cooked at, you know, Ed's Thai restaurant down the street. We made that there. No, they don't have it anywhere else. And so, it's pretty funny.
Is there a certain weight that sits on his shoulders that you saw, like a certain responsibility to himself in the cuisine?
Oh, yeah. He holds himself to a higher standard than anyone. They say that he could make so many shortcuts that he just refuses to do. And he buys the equipment in Thailand and gets the coconut milk, presses it the same way they will in Thailand, and you could just get it from a can, and we probably maybe wouldn't notice, but to him, that means the world to him.
Yeah, there's no other way. I mean, even if when filming with him, I've tried to as being behind the camera, you try to get some kind of draw some kind of common bond with them, and I would try to mention some type of like Thai dish that maybe I had some other place, and just look at you blankly and be like, oh no, I don't know about that. And I'm like, all right.
Okay. And then you just eat more wings and.
Yeah. Oh, that's the best part. The most famous thing on his menu is a take on a Vietnamese style food.
Yeah. Well, you know, we've talked about this and with the Franks as well, is that sometimes you just need that one item to which you can build an empire, meatballs, chicken wings. And from there, you can really grow and flex your muscle as a chef or as a brand or as videos in the same way that you guys have done with Munchies, which is your core viewing type of experience, and then go from there. And it's amazing. I mean, that's people want in some ways something familiar they can sort of sink their teeth into, and then also trust you to experience something new as well.
That's a good way to put it. I think that Munchies is the thing that's gonna, you know, bring people in. Like I said, my a friend who we've worked with in the past, he says his father sent him a couple episodes of Munchies and said, oh, we got to try these out. But then the people that want to stick around, they'll watch the Andy Ricker doc, or they're going to watch the stuff that we're going to do that's, you know, not on the, you know, so much enjoyable side of food. And we got a series coming out, The Politics of Food, and that will deal with some, you know, harsher food-related topics, but that's all going to be found on one site or one channel, which is, you know, you don't have to, your favorite television station is also going to have your favorite guide to where to go eat and articles you can read and just picture galleries. And then from there, if you choose to go and explore something a little deeper, we'll have the video content to go along with that.
And just one last question. Are you guys looking forward to taking risks in type of programming and more of just, since it's not putting up a TV show, it's not dealing with sponsors, it's not dealing with commercials, saying, okay, this show sounds interesting, we'll try it.
Totally. I mean, I think what Chris just said about the politics of food, the fact that something really serious could exist in the same place when you're going out for a late night romp of kind of gluttonous food adventure, and then you can have a serious documentary maybe about famine or water issues. I think we want to be on that line where you're uncomfortable and controversial and maybe pushing things too far, and then have things that are a little safe. It's kind of what Vice does, is rides that line a little bit.
Amazing. Well, congratulations. I'm looking forward to seeing more of it. Where can people go online or social media to find all your stuff?
Right now, just go to vice.com/munchies, and that should lead you to all that stuff on the on Vice YouTube. If you just go to youtube.com/vice, and then there you can set up a Munchies playlist, which seems like a lot of people are doing. It's a little easier maybe to navigate than the site. And then follow us at Munchies on Twitter and Vice Munchies on Instagram.
Awesome. All right, well, thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to take a short musical break, and then Octa is going to be live in studio.
Play. I don't know you, but you know me. We could have been something to see. You're really nice, but I just can't. You're so damn sweet, but there's no chance I like you. So you just don't know what about me. You're really nice, but I just can't. You're so damn sweet, but there's no chance I like you. So you just don't know what about me. I thought there was a spark with us. Now who am I supposed to trust? You wanted her instead of me, so now we're in kid history.
So welcome to Snacky Tunes.
Hello.
You are definitely the most appropriate dressed summer guy going here.
Except for in here where it's cold, and now I wish I had something of a longer sleeve.
I'm sorry, we only have the boar's head, not the boar's pelt.
No. Nice.
So welcome, super excited, your EP just came out, you've been a proud father since the end of May.
No, not true.
No?
Oh, so the EP? I've been the a proud LP. Father of this EP?
The LP, yes.
Yes.
No, not your actual kid, but you've
birthed, I have no kids yet.
You birthed this LP.
I did.
In May 28th. How does it feel?
It was the most stressful thing I've ever put together.
What was the process for you?
It was me having a nervous breakdown and then writing a record about it.
Interesting.
So,
well, it sounds like you got the nervous breakdown out of the way.
Yes.
Before the actual album.
No, it was like partially recorded before, and then finished afterwards, and it was a stressful thing to put together.
But you're happy with it now.
Yeah, I'm pretty happy with it now.
Pretty happy with it. That's a very typical artist answer.
Right, of course.
It's like,
there's always, forever, there's always more. I hear something, I'm like, I could change all these small things. But it doesn't matter, it's done. It's over.
It's done.
Yeah.
So, for those who've never heard you, with the exception of the opening track of the show,
yeah,
how would you explain your sound?
I do house and techno.
Love it.
Like, dance music, pretty straightforward.
So real summertime vibes.
Yeah, gotta be summertime vibes.
Always summertime, even the winter?
Ooh.
Do you have like a darker winter set?
I mean, I've been writing a lot of like really, really cold tunes recently, trying to get out of the heat, but I mean...
Gotta cool it down a little bit.
You gotta cool it down sometimes.
That house techno sound. I love it.
It's fun.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Did you always start out loving house and techno, or had you fun
doing it? I always liked electronic music. I actually was huge into like drum and bass and jungle for years and years and years, and then some IDM stuff. So I didn't really like house or techno because it has a 4/4 beat. Mm-hmm. It just felt too simple to me for years when I was a teenager, and then something clicked, and now that's the thing I care about more than anything.
More than anything?
Yeah.
House music?
Yeah.
All night long?
Sure.
Awesome. Well, do you want to play a track for us?
Yeah, why not?
What do you have ready for us?
I'll play a tune that was on the LP. Song Please Don't Leave.
Awesome. All right. Well, Octa Octa here live on Snacky Tunes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Oh, man. That's awesome.
Thanks.
Really like that.
Good.
Smoothed out.
Yeah.
So you've had a busy start to the summer. You did some of the Red Bull Music Academy.
Yeah.
What was your involvement there?
I was one of the participants in the first term of it. So I was there for the first 2 weeks of the month that they were doing events throughout the city.
That's great. What did you get to do with them?
I played, so I was just there. They brought in lectures every day. So you just went to two lectures from, you know, producers or mastering engineers, or someone would come in and talk. And then we had time. They had studios set up so we could just work on whatever music with people. And then they would have an event every night they could go out to do. And everyone participating played one event. So I played the Bunker Party with Andy Stott and Adam TM and Object with the three.
Those Bunker parties are a blast.
They're super fun. It was a great party.
What was your set from like 6 a.m. to 8 a.m.?
No. I wish. I love playing super, super, super late sets. I did the 6 a.m. set in Germany once on a Monday. It was my favorite. But no, I did like a. I was like an opener, but I still got to play it like 1 to 2, 2:30, yeah. Which is still a great time to play.
When you play those early morning sets, do you ever take a late night nap and wake up early, or do you stay up all night?
I try to take a nap. I think a 20 minutes nap good. Yeah. A disco nap, 20 minute disco nap. That's about.
I think disco naps happen somewhere between 10 and midnight. Those deep house set naps are more of a light snooze, maybe.
Yeah. No, you gotta.
It's tricky.
I feel like as long as that nap comes before 11 o'clock.
Yeah,
I think you're good.
You're good.
Because there's a time, there'll be a period where then you'll wake up and you'll be like, do I really want to go now? Do I still really want to go out?
Oh my god. They're definitely that, like, you wake up at like, it's definitely like between 12:30 and 1:30, you're like, am I getting up? Am I doing this?
Yeah.
And then you were also in Australia, right?
Yeah.
How was that?
It was great.
They know how to party.
Oh yeah, Perth on the West Coast is insane. Absolutely insane.
Tell me about your time in Perth.
It was, I don't know, went to the ocean, hung out with the dudes that played all these great weird disco and funk records, and just played at a club that was a rock and roll club that they were converting into something else. There was a giant 6 foot tall elephant head with glowing red eyes that was above the stage. It was insane.
And what did you get to eat in Perth? Any good food?
No, I had a bunch of pho that I did not like.
Oh.
That was about, people kept bringing us to noodle places, and I love udon, but it just wasn't happening. It was a bummer.
What's the best meal you've ever had on around the world on tour when you got to play?
What was the best thing I had? Ooh, I don't know. Oh, I don't know. Just noodles.
Noodles.
I go anywhere. I just always, as long as someone somewhere has noodles. Most of the time I spend time in Germany, and Germany just typically doesn't have the greatest food. When I was in Madrid, I had a lot of great little things like some blood sausage and things like that.
Some tapas.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
What's your favorite noodle spot in New York?
Chuco.
Okay.
Yeah. I like there a lot. I like that place a lot.
Yeah.
It's been my favorite so far.
Is there a food that you eat when you were writing and during your nervous breakdown that you found as a comfort?
Probably some ramen.
Some ramen.
Most likely.
That's ramen.
Ramen with an egg dropped in it.
Yeah, hey.
Super fancy.
Even when I'm not feeling down, that always picks up my spirit. All right, let's hear another track. What do you got next?
I got this older tune off a tape I did like 2 years ago.
What's it called?
It's a song's called Memories.
Okay, cool. Octa Octa here playing Memories live on Snacky Tunes. Okay. Thank you. Nice. Summer grooves all over your stuff.
Yeah, man.
So what do you have coming up for the rest of the year now that the LP is out? I know you got a couple of new New York shows coming up, some with two of my favorite dudes and Lady, the Discovery Crew.
Yeah, in September.
In September. That's going to be awesome. Over at Cameo. By the way, their new sound system... not Cameo, Glasslands.
Glasslands, yeah.
The new sound system at Glasslands is awesome.
I was there... I opened for John Hopkins there. It sounded great.
It's great. Yeah, and I think they're going to hang the speakers. It's going to get even better. And I love the new lights. Fantastic. The new glass.
Oh, the new lights are great.
Glasslands is really one of the few places I can speak of that start off as the most DIY, live-in, disgusting bathroom space that turned legit.
Yeah. I like that. I like that space a lot.
I like that space a lot. And then you're playing at Glasslands so that's September. And then Cameo.
Cameo's this Friday.
This Friday.
With Anthony Naples. And I like that space a lot, too.
I think that their paper installation is still one of the best. Yeah, it's so weird. Like, people walk in and never in, they're like, what is that? But they've also done, shout out to Jiffy, who did an amazing job expanding that space, blowing it out.
No, it's great. And that basement's great, too.
Oh, yeah, the basement's cool. It's like the disco downstairs basement.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, den from the 70s.
Oh, absolutely.
And then you're playing in the big city, the Big Apple.
Yeah, I'm playing on a boat.
Ooh.
A boat at the end of the month.
Okay.
With Switch and Neon Indians doing a DJ set and Grandmaster Flash.
Shout out to Alan.
It should be
Grandmaster
fun.
Flash.
Yeah.
That is a lineup.
I know, it'll be exciting.
I bet you're going to drive past the Statue of Liberty on that boat tour.
I hope so.
If there's one route. I don't understand. There's only one route for all the boats. Sometimes it takes an hour, sometimes it takes 4 hours. I don't get it. And then beyond that, you putting out any new tracks? Are you doing any singles?
No, I have nothing planned right now, but I just finished a whole bunch of tunes that I'm sending out, and something beyond on Silk, and it's all coming.
It's all coming?
Yeah, yeah.
You feel good about the future?
Yeah, yeah, I feel good about the future right now. It wasn't for a while. There were like 6 months. I kept trying to write stuff. Nothing was happening. And then...
It's that creative process.
That's right. It's hard, man.
It's a burden.
You gotta wait it out. Wait it out. Keep trying.
Yeah.
Stuff eventually starts coming together again.
We gotta talk to the people over at Thump.
Yeah. There you go.
All the electronic people.
Are you 100% Silk?
Yeah, yeah.
We used a lot of music for that Tattoo Age series for Not Fun.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, he licensed something from Jason and Aurora.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the Inner Gaze?
Inner Gaze,
yeah,
stuff,
yeah.
And, but, you know, a lot of, Xander Harris, is
mm-hmm.
he on that?
Yeah.
One of the, yeah, the, some crossovers.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, So we try and do that on Snackadoons, have those crossovers that we don't even know about. Well, anyway, I want to thank Lauren and Chris for hanging out, talking about everything video and Vice, for helping jam on that pizza. And then, Octo, you're going to take us out with something. Thank you. But before you go, Nuts and Bolts, people want to find the LP, find you online, Instagram, what's all that stuff?
Oh, I'm just Octo_Octo on Twitter. There's a Facebook thing. I think the record's available at whatever stores.
That's a really good store.
Yeah, but no. But it's like, what? It's distributed through Revolver or Midhaven? They distro everywhere, man.
Okay. Oh, my God. When labels are just... The guy at the label is going like, God, dude.
That's right. Or go to their site. What is it? ListenToSilk.com. You can buy all the records on
there
their
we go.
Site.
ListenToSilk.com. There we go. And that's... OCTO_OCTA.
Yep.
And, all right, well, come out if you're not too hungover from July 4th this weekend. But your type of music is what helps people get over hangovers.
Yeah, you just keep drinking. You just start drinking again.
Keep
That's how
drinking.
You do it.
See fireworks 2 nights in a row, right?
That's right, perfect.
So what's the last track you can take us out with?
It's a track I finished like 2 days ago. It doesn't really have a name.
Can we call it an exclusive?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Awesome. All right, great. Snacky Tunes exclusive. Octo Octa. We'll be next week with, Two Shot, Mike Thielen, and Paulie Brent here on Snacky Tunes. He's going to be talking about the Elm. Super excited. Cannot wait. Summer is officially here. And July 9th, BBQ Blowout, July.eventbrite.com. Mark Vetri, Brad Spence, Jason Green on the decks. It's going to be good. Come hang out, say hi. We'll see you next week.
Yeah.
Well, that's it. We'll be right back.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awele, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.